WWE.com.
In the Paracast with Gene Steinberg, our co-host is Chris O'Brien, and there was a comment on iTunes reviewing the Paracast recently saying, you know what, we're so skeptical that I can't get any guests except for my close friends. And I think, who are my close friends? So let's see. Well, for example, Stan Friedman's one of my close friends. Jerome Clark is a friend, not a close friend, but somebody I've known for many years. Jim Moseley, Alan Greenfield, Tim Beckley. Gee, there's a lot of people I know who come on the show, so I guess if I stay with my close friends, I'm doing pretty well. And today I've got another friend, and at one time we knew each other quite well, but we haven't talked in over 40 years. And you wonder, we have actually spent, prior to this interview, about 6 or 7 minutes on the phone getting reacquainted. And now that we're reacquainted, I'll acquaint him with you, because he's someone maybe you haven't heard about, but he has a lot of knowledge and has done extensive research into UFOs and related mysteries. He's Dave Halperin. He's author of a new book called Journal of a UFO Investigator, which happens to be a novel. We'll get to the book later on. Dave, 45 years later, how's it going, man?
Enjoying life, Gene.
So, tell me what you've done in the past 45 years.
Oh, dear. Well, I started out as a teenage UFO investigator about in the early and middle 60s, and that was when we knew each other fairly well. And then later my UFO interest waned, and I became interested in other things, like the wheels of the prophet Ezekiel, and traditions of heavenly ascensions, and otherworldly journeys. And unlike UFOs, these were things which back in the 1970s, it was possible to go to graduate school and study and write a PhD dissertation and get a job, in my case, in the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and even get tenure in it. And once I got tenure, I began to think about what I guess it's pretty obvious that these interests, although perfectly respectable academically, are pretty closely related to my teenage UFO interests.
You never ran away from that original interest in UFOs.
Or if I ran away, it followed me.
It has a habit of doing that. I've tried over and over through the years to give up UFO research. I do it for a few years. And then somehow it drags me back in. Back in 2006, I was dragged in. Not kicking and screaming, and that's where the Paracast started. Anyway, okay, so let's go back to the teenage UFO years in reality, and we'll look at the novel later on. But back in the 60s, back in the 70s, young people were attracted to things like UFOs. Why? Was it something that was wrong with us? Why were we attracted? You and I and Alan Greenfield, Jerome Clark, Tim Beckley, all these people being interested in the possibility that we're being visited by E.T.?
I can't speak for you. I can only speak for myself. And I will tell you exactly how I got drawn into it. In the fall of 1960, when I was 12 going on 13, I read a book. And this was Gray Barker's They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. I remember being seized by the conviction that this was the truth, that flying saucers had to be real, because otherwise, why were three men in black going around silencing people about it? I know this because I've reread a column I wrote for my school newspaper on flying saucers. I didn't yet call them UFOs, that initially I didn't believe they were from other planets, so that the subject fascinated me. Not because I thought they were extraterrestrial, but but for some other reason. And I think I can guess at that reason. Now, I will tell you this, knowing that probably anybody who reads my novel can guess that this part is autobiographical. That in our household, which was a family consisting of me, my father, and my mother, we had a terrible secret that none of us dared to speak with each other about. And that was that my mother was not merely a semi-invalid, as we called her, but that she was slowly dying of an incurable heart disease. So when I read Gray Barker's stories about the terrible secret that three men in black visit you if you even come even close to it and force you not to talk about it, this seemed to me a true and faithful mirror of reality as I knew it, and the reality that nobody else would talk about. So for that reason, I became convinced this was real.
In retrospect, I think more and more people realize that Gray Barker was a very good storyteller. He'd take the truth and sometimes add a little bit more than the truth to his stories, to his books, to his magazine articles, more so as he got older. Did you come to that realization too at any point in time?
Oh, I think so. But I think there's something else true, that Gray Barker had his own secret. Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. We had a story here, as a matter of fact, we had an episode. We featured the movie Shades of Grey, this
yes.
biography of Gray Barker about his life. And yes, we had Jim Moseley on. We had people who knew Gray Barker in addition to Jim, so certainly there are no secrets here.
Yes, and the secret no longer seems quite as terrible as it would have in the 1950s. And the secret, for those of your listeners who are not familiar with it, is that Gray Barker was gay. And let's hope that we're moving into an era in which no one can even understand why that should be kept secret at all. But certainly in the context of West Virginia around the middle of the last century, Gray Barker was carrying a terrific, terrible, unrevealable secret. And I think that whatever his distortions, whatever his fabrications, whatever his, let's give it the finest term we can, mismaking, was in that book, it's informed by his own terrible secret, and that gives it the feel of authenticity.
So in a sense, knowing he had to keep a terrible secret, he could extrapolate and see how other people were keeping their own terrible secrets. Again, assuming that the secret at one time was considered terrible, of course it's not today.
Yeah, or he could, let's just put it a little bit differently from the way you did, that he could infuse whatever may have happened to Albert Bender and perhaps the other people he writes about with an authentic feeling of terror and the need to keep something secret. And I think it was this authentic feeling that spoke to me when I read his book and convinced me, yes, this is the truth. The people who say these things are not real, they are the liars.
With regard to UFOs, I think a lot of people came to that realization for different reasons. But do you believe there really are or were men in black?
Oh boy, I am hesitating here because the answer is no and yes and no.
Well.
Okay, I think Bender was probably visited by somebody. I don't know who or why. I've read Mike Swords' theory that government red hunters, this was the McCarthy era, of course, 1953, that government red hunters picked up on the name of Bender's organization, the International Flying Saucer Bureau. The word international rang alarm bells. They thought it was a communist front organization and stopped by to find out. That, to me, is the most plausible theory.
And we'll go into more theories in a moment. We have David Halperin. His new book is called Journal of a UFO Investigator. It's a novel about the teen UFO years. I'm going to ask him if I'm in the book, because I'll tell you why in a moment. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You can download a version that is mostly full-featured. Try it out. And if you like it, it's just $34.95 for Graphic Converter from LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com for my favorite Graphic Converter.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Skip the long lines and high prices at the florist, because right now at ProFlowers.com, you can get 2 dozen assorted roses with a free glass vase and a free box of chocolates for just $29.99. Just visit ProFlowers.com, look for the radio microphone in the upper right corner, and enter the secret code 4444. Unlike overpriced flowers at the florist, which sit in the cooler for days, our flowers are sent fresh cut from the fields and are guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least 7 full days. Just visit ProFlowers.com today to get 2 dozen assorted roses with a free glass vase and free chocolates for only $29.99. Order now and pick the delivery date you want. It's guaranteed. But hurry, because Valentine's Day is this Monday, and our special offer ends this Friday. The only way to get this amazing deal is to visit ProFlowers.com. Look for the radio microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code 4444.
This is not a drill.
Repeat.
This is not a drill.
Gun sales are on a staggering pace.
Gun prices are going through the roof, and that means desperate, vicious criminals now want your guns
and will do anything to get them.
Now, a new book reveals powerful secrets for hiding your guns from thieves and looters. You'll learn step-by-step, battle-hardened techniques, where to hide your guns so criminals will never find them,
how to create the perfect hiding place,
as well as the places you should never hide your guns
under any circumstance.
These and other closely guarded gun caching secrets are guaranteed to keep your weapons safe and out of sight when the going gets tough.
But listen up.
For security reasons, the Hide Your Guns book and even the website may disappear without warning at any time. Go to hideyourguns.com.
That's hideyourguns.com.
Or call 877-327-0365.
Before they come for your guns.
Hideyourguns.com right now.
Right now.
Right now.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. We return with Dave Halperin, my old friend from Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact, who has been studying UFOs on and off for many, many decades. He's author of a new book called Journal of a UFO Investigator, a novel based on the teen UFO years. And we're talking about his belief, his belief systems, and about, right now, the Men in Black. And we started with Gray Barker and the book They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, which was his bestseller that made him famous. And probably he lived on that fame, more or less, for pretty much the rest of his life. Although he was not wealthy by any means, but that's another story, as contained in the documentary Shades of Grey. Anyway, okay, so you think that maybe not three men in black, but government agents came to Albert Bender and just were curious as to what he was doing, that he didn't just make it all up.
That's my guess. Do I believe in the three men in black? How about if we transfer that from belief in them as flesh and blood human beings or entities in this tangible world to some sort of psychological pattern that tends to emerge in different times?
Okay, now you're raising some interesting possibilities here. Okay, so we're moving in one area, physical men in black or government agents dressed in dark or black suits, and now you're talking about something psychological. In what sense?
Probably Jungian archetypes. Okay, let me tell you where I'm going with this.
Sure.
That one of the people I've been working with, that I've been studying over the past 10 years or so, was a Jewish mystic, a Kabbalist, from the 17th century, named Abraham Miguel Cardozo. And one night in 1683, Cardozo has a vision. He sees four people on the moon, three men and a woman, and he thinks he knows who the three men are. The three men come down from the moon, straight into his garden, and afterwards into his bedroom, it seems. And there they discuss Kabbalah, they discuss theology with him, and it becomes clear that they're not the people he thought they were. Instead, they're demons who have been sent to seduce him into heresy. They challenge him to have his God send fire upon them to burn them up, which he can't do, and instead their demon god sends fire upon Cardozo in the form of a burning fever, and he speaks at one point that these three black-clad beings stood by my bed.
I'm curious, one question here very quickly.
Sure.
They came down from the moon. Were they in a craft of some sort, or were they just basically levitate?
He doesn't tell us. And I'm quite sure he had no idea that the moon was, 240,000, 280,000 miles away. My guess is he thought it was just beyond the next fence. But no, he doesn't say a word about a craft.
So do you get this sense here that he was writing of something real or something that he dreamt?
Let's say a hallucination.
Okay.
I don't think he saw these as physical beings. But I think when he saw them, he was experiencing something he'd seen in paintings from his and sculpture from his childhood. And I need to say that Cardozo, although he was Jewish, was brought up as a Catholic in Spain. In Spain, there were myriads of paintings, of sculptures, of the Virgin Mary standing on the moon, often accompanied by three male cherubic heads. And I think that a memory of what he'd seen as a child erupted from his unconscious.
So we have this image of three men that goes through our religions too.
Yeah. And that, I think, is what an archetype is about. It's something that's part of us, that seems to transcend us as individuals. In that sense, it's outside of us. In that sense, it's something real. And in that sense, I can say, yes, I believe in the three men in black, but as visitors from inner space, not from outer, and not most basically from the government, even though, I mean, Bender's visitors may have been from the government, but and presumably they were real flesh and blood human beings, but that they get their power, the story gets its power from their fitting in with this archetype that Cardozo also experienced more than 300 years ago.
So do you think that maybe Bender's experience was partly physical and partly psychological, that he framed it in this way because of the archetype and the unconscious feelings?
Here we have to guess. I think it's a possibility.
Well, you know, of course, Bender wrote this book, Flying Saucers and the Three Men, where he claimed that the three men in black were really alien visitors from the planet Kayak. And also he reported, you know, receiving some sort of sexually related treatment as part of this. And having heard Bender lecture about this, it's not something that Gray Barker, who published the book, just added to the tale. Maybe Barker wrote it, rewrote it extensively, did a lot of editing, but the core story was Bender's.
Yeah. And I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I certainly don't believe that it happened in what I guess Jerry Clark and others would call consensus reality.
Okay.
And yet, I think it may have some significance to understanding the meaning of the three men in black.
Well, it's very interesting, too, that we haven't heard so much lately of three men in black. I mean, certainly if you read the books of John Keel, he had all sorts of stories about that. He encountered evidence of people making fake phone calls, things like that. Evidence of people encountering them, but lately we don't hear it. Do you?
Yeah, I have not.
Okay. Now, we did a show on the Men in Black recently with Tim Beckley and Alan Greenfield, and both went into areas where, as a matter of fact, they did encounter supposed people who may have been Men in Black. And some of those things are kind of controversial. And those who haven't heard the episode, I'll just ask your neighbors, you know, listen to the episode that we did on the Men in Black and make your own decisions, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe you feel that Alan Greenfield, for example, believed a little too much when he saw this person go around the corner and suddenly he's gone, or about the person seen outside the home of the late Jack and Mary Robinson in Jersey City, New Jersey. You know, who was that person? That's a good question. That's a very good question. We have Dave Halperin. He is author of a book called Journal of a UFO Investigator, a novel about the teen UFO years. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-877-804-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So, disable the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV right now to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99 and up to four rooms. And there's no equipment to buy. That includes your free HDTV upgrade, your free DVR upgrade, and your free professional installation. And the best part, the pristine digital picture and sound. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV. So, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV. 1-877-804-MY-TV. Disable the cable, cut costs, and get more. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV. 1-877-804-MY-TV.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one. Because everything you need at Military Surplus is at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com. One of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to MainMilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99. Complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish and M10 gas masks are 3 for $30, and Swiss filters are 3 for $12. Searching for strike anywhere matches? MainMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E Military.com, or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MainMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
This special announcement is brought to you by Renaissance Charge.
Have you ever wondered if you could make your car run on 100% electric power for free? It is now possible. How about a simple device that is both a super efficient motor and a free energy generator at the same time? What if this could also be used to restore useless batteries and save you lots of money? Because our customers asked for it, we have organized a Renaissance Charge Conference Workshop on July 29th to July 31st at the beautiful Coeur d'Alene Resort in Idaho. Not only will you see these fascinating energizers, but you will be able to build some alongside genius inventor John Bedini. Participate in this truly historic event featuring our cutting-edge alternative energy, Tesla technology. Register early for the best seats and advanced workshop by visiting rcharge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
You're in the Paracast with Gene Steinberg and Chris O'Brien, who is now our permanent co-host. For those wondering, he gets his gold watch next week. No, he doesn't. He gets his gold watch after 72 episodes. And then he gives it back to me because we can only loan it to him. We can't afford to actually buy one. I think it's going to be one half carat gold. I'm sorry about that, Chris. Our guest this week, my old dear friend, Dave Halperin. We've rediscovered him after all these years. I'm really happy to enjoy what he has to say, his extensive knowledge about ancient studies and UFOs. He's author of a book called Journal of a UFO Investigator. Now, we were talking about physical and maybe not so physical men in black, but back to Albert K. Bender, the book Flying Saucers and the Three Men. So I want to basically leave this after this particular reference. David, do you think that he actually had a physical encounter with aliens, or is that part of the science fiction or part of his imagination in terms of believing he had an experience that didn't happen?
Okay, well, I can tell you, I'm completely convinced he did not have an encounter physically with aliens. Now, where his story comes from and what significance we're to give to it in making sense of Bender himself, I don't know. It is really striking to me, Gene, that I think you're referring to that episode where he's taken aboard a UFO and there's three women wearing tight uniforms and they massage every part of his body without exception.
Oh, yes. I remember when Jim Moseley reviewed that book in Saucer News. And he was going wild over that segment, as you might expect.
And it's only one incidental throwaway remark. And we only can infer what went on from that without exception. And I can't remember whether Bender italicizes that or not. And yet, I think probably Mosley's instinct was correct. That experience with the three women, or the imagined experience, as I would think, was something pivotal to Bender's story.
So you think that sexual innuendo there, that has something to do with the original report of being visited by three men?
That I don't know. And I don't know how these things fit together. But it does strike me that unobtrusive remark of Bender's seems to be so well remembered. And I really believe that how people receive what you say, how people report what you say, may point to the inner meaning of what you've said. Am I coming across here?
Oh, yeah. I think I understand perfectly what you're saying, Chris.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's look at some of the definitions here. We seem to see that these beings, whoever they are, seem to come in groups of three. Is there some symbolism about that?
Well, what strikes me, and the reason why I raise that with you, is that as far as I know, Bender's the only one who experiences them as three. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't recall another case of the number three actually occurring in the lore. And yet we remember them as three, which leads me to think there is something archetypal about that number, something connected with Cardozo's three men in black from the moon. And the model that I would use to interpret it would be the Jungian archetype of the quaternity, that there is something embedded in our, I'm going to go so far as to say collective psyche, though I know I'm getting onto to extremely thin ice here, something embedded in our collective psyche that sees a significance in the number four, of which the fourth member is different from the other three. And where you've got a threesome, it may be a quaternity that's been in some way mutilated and abridged. Now, if you ask me who is the fourth to Bender's three men in black, I've got to admit I don't know. But I think the persistence of that number suggests that there's something about it that our psyches respond to.
That makes sense to me. You don't have to worry about talking about Jung around me. I'm a real affectionado. In fact, I got a copy of the Red Book. I don't know if you've heard about this, but all his journals,
yeah,
from 1916 to 1932 were released by the family in this huge,
yes,
2 foot tall book.
Yes.
And Jung, I think for mainstream nuts and bolts ufology, does not get a fair shake. I think there is something to the collective unconscious. I don't care what Jerry Clark says. I don't care what Stanton Friedman says. They're missing the boat as far as I'm concerned. There's tremendous importance in examining the collective human unconscious as it relates to paranormal subjects and especially ufology. So I applaud you on that analogy.
But now I have to ask you a question, Chris. Did Jerry deny the relevance of Jung, or simply deny that this was the core of the mystery?
Well, it's funny. In one breath, he was saying that there's no such thing as a collective unconscious, that he didn't believe that. And then he went on to describe a scenario where something akin to an out-of-the-box theory has all of us sort of manifesting this together, which sounds like he was denying it and agreeing with it in the same, practically the same breath. So, no, he was really down on Vallée and Jung and just the whole idea of collectively manifesting phenomena, which I think is going on personally.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am. I'm drawn to Jung, despite that I find his mystagogic style of writing very off-putting.
Yeah.
In my research, I just keep running into data that I need Jung to correlate and explain. like the three men from the moon accompanied by a woman that I talked with Gene about earlier, whom the Jewish mystic Abraham Cardozo sees in 1683. I think I have my differences with Jerry, but I'm not sure they, from my own perspective, that they're quite that sharp. It's just, to me, it's just a question of emphasis, that he sees the essential issue as being the event anomaly, which I guess I don't know that I'm qualified to talk about, although I tend to be skeptical about it, whereas I see the essence as being in the experience anomaly and what inside us that may be coming from.
Well, I really do feel that we have to be looking at these things from an out-of-the-box perspective. Yeah. And I think Jung, although I don't agree with everything that he postulates, and I do have a problem with some of his languaging, as you do, I do really have a sense that there is a collective manifestation of phenomena going on. And the human mind tends to revert to archetypal primal symbols and when it's faced with the unknown. And
yeah.
And I found that I've interviewed thousands of witnesses as a field investigator over the years, and I've noticed this tendency for people to get very basic when they describe their emotional state after an experience, when they describe the details of something that is in their mind fear-based especially, and you see it in the New Age as well. There seems to be a knee-jerk reaction to this stuff to go to very positive archetypal symbols, archetypal symbols. And this is something, again, that I don't really feel gets enough attention in this field. And I you know, thank you for for bringing this up. This is an important issue for me.
We'll get into more of this in a moment. We have David Halperin, author of a novel, Journal of a UFO Investigator, longtime researcher into UFOs, especially involving ancient studies and so forth and so on. We'll get into that in a moment. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey neighbors, Mac security threats come in many forms. Trojan horses and other types of malware try to infect your Mac. Booby-trapped websites try to steal your personal information, and hackers try to get into your Mac over a network. Intego Virus Barrier X6 is much more than just an antivirus program. Virus Barrier X6 protects against all these threats and more. Visit intego.com. That's intego.com.
Have you been sitting on a few great domain name ideas but haven't locked them in for yourself? Good. Now you can buy them through the number one domain name registrar, Namecheap.com, as voted by the top tech blog Lifehacker. Just like the name says, you can buy domains cheap, as low as $2.99. And every new domain comes with WhoisGuard, our special privacy service, free for the first year. Now that you know, it's time to grab those domain names before someone else does. Namecheap.com. Go now. Namecheap.com.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeSig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeSig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeSig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeSig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeSig.com. That's L-E-C-I. IG.com. LeSig is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LeSig.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's L-E-C-I-G.com. LeSig, for today's modern smoker.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
If you're serious about playing college football, give yourself the competitive edge with the National Underclassmen Football Combine. The NUC is the longest-running underclassmen event and the most respected combine and football camp in the nation. Specifically designed to give athletes early recruiting exposure, there's no better time than now to compete in the National Underclassmen Football Combine. Call 888-NUC-MVP1 or go to nationalunderclassmen.com to find out more.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
We return with David Halperin. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in the Paracast. We're exploring now all sorts of images and beliefs about UFOs, about ancient studies, how they may relate to modern studies. Do you think if we have physical UFOs, David, that they were here when Ezekiel saw the wheels as depicted in the Bible?
No. I mean, and here I would totally agree with Jerry that what we've got in Ezekiel's vision is, I guess I would call it an experience anomaly, because I've spent much of my life studying that vision and the spin-offs of that vision in Jewish tradition, and I've got to tell you, I still don't understand it. I don't see it as a machine. I don't see it as anything extraterrestrial. I think I know the direction on which I try to understand Ezekiel's wheels. But when I try to explain the details of the vision verse by verse, I find myself baffled.
Interesting. What about it doesn't work for you?
Well, take the wheels themselves. What are these wheels? I mean, the song the spiritual that's based on the chapter, Ezekiel saw the wheels way up in the middle of the air, sounds much more UFO-like than Ezekiel's description itself. What Ezekiel describes, and I'm taking just a moment to open my Bible to that chapter, he says that as I beheld the living creatures, behold one wheel, my translation says at the bottom, but the Hebrew says on the earth, hard by the living creatures, at the four faces thereof. Now, what does that mean? What is a wheel on the earth? Why is it on the earth? Then in the that was verse 15. Now, in the very next verse, the appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of a beryl, and they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work were as it were a wheel within a wheel. How did we get from one wheel to four? Do you see the sort of problems that keep bugging me?
Well, it's almost like a riddle.
Yeah. And while we're talking, I have in front of me an illustration from the frontispiece of a book published in 1935, Studies in the Book of Ezekiel, that shows a silver coin from Gaza in the latter part of the 5th century BCE, which would be about 150 years after Ezekiel. It shows a bearded human figure sitting on what seems to be a chariot, which has both a very prominent wheel with four spokes and a very prominent wing between the wheel and the human-like figure. And right around the face of this bearded figure are the three letters in Hebrew, Yod, He, Vav, which seem to indicate the Jewish God, Yahweh. So this looks like a picture of Ezekiel's God riding a chariot with a wing, and the wings are all over the place in the first chapter of Ezekiel, and a very prominent wheel. So I think those are the lines along which we're to look for an interpretation of what Ezekiel reports in this chapter. I don't think in terms of modern technology, extraterrestrial, extraterrestrial at all. But if I take that picture and apply it to the chapter, there are, the chapter says so much more and so much so confusingly that I don't know just how to make the connection.
In the long and short of it, David Halpern, are we saying then that people like Eric Von Daniken and even our old friend Yona Fortner from the days of Saucer News, when they talked about spaceships visiting in ancient times, none of that is physically true?
Yeah, I would say that. I would absolutely say that. Now, that doesn't mean, if we're going back to our friend Jung, that doesn't mean that Ezekiel's vision was not of UFOs.
That's an interesting paradox.
Right.
What was the name of the book that was written by the NASA scientist, I think in the 80s? I have a copy of it in boxes somewhere. But it was an examination of the Ezekiel description, which he was able to then kind of create this strange-looking contraption that is on the cover of the book. Do you remember that book, Gene?
Offhand, no.
It was a NASA scientist who wrote a little book about Ezekiel's, about the actual physical device that he felt was being described. I'll have to do a little research on that while we're doing this, and I'll mention it for our listeners. It's a pretty interesting book, but again, it flies in the face of what David's saying here, so... Let's continue. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'll go find the title of this book while we're talking.
I think the author is Joseph Blumrich, yeah?
I'm not sure. He was an American NASA scientist, if I remember correctly. I'll look it up.
Okay, so we'll hear the sound now of Chris O'Brien searching Google or his vast library, which he can't do because he's not at his home office now. He's in California. He's watching the bikini-clad babes.
Oh, yeah.
Through his picture window.
Oh, yeah. I'm right on the beach.
That's right. He's talking to us from the beach, folks. Okay? You know, so we always wondered about that, whether this guy is involved in the beach, but now we know that he wants to be a beach bum, which you can't do in Arizona. Okay, so let's go back to what we're talking about here, David. Okay, so if the ancient events that we see in the Bible and elsewhere, if they're not physical UFO visitations, you know, rather than going into various causes that we've already started covering, when do you think the UFO mystery as a physical phenomenon, if it is a physical phenomenon, began?
Okay, and there, I think, I would start us with 1947. When it becomes, and I'm not sure if I would say as a physical phenomenon, but as a cultural phenomenon. I mean, people have seen odd things in the skies going way, way back. There's no question about that. But it seems to be with the Kenneth Arnold sighting that it becomes an identifiable enigma, that you point at certain, there's a certain class of mysterious things that are called first flying saucers and then UFOs. Whether there is anything physical present, I do not know. I'm inclined to doubt it, but I've got to say that Jerry Clark is far more qualified to speak to that end than to speak to that aspect of it than I am. But I would just have to say for myself, I am disinclined to think there is anything physical out of the ordinary.
Okay, maybe would you look into things like ultra-terrestrials, like what John Keel was talking about? Is that referring to something that is physical or not so physical?
How does Keel use the term ultra-terrestrials?
That they're demons. They're here to mess with our heads.
Yeah, and I believe in demons as a psychological phenomenon. I think when we talk about our inner demons, it's a very meaningful way to speak of the things that torment us. And I have no doubt that people like the one I keep coming back to, Abraham Cardozo, will experience those demons objectified outside themselves. But I certainly don't think they exist the way rabbits and dogs and cats do, and the way the planet Venus or the moon or the clouds or the meteors do.
Well, of course, the question will be asked by our listeners, and the one I'll ask, and we'll probably have to pursue that question in the next segment, and that is, okay, if they can be photographed, if they can be tracked on radar, if they evidently leave physical traces in the ground, how can we say UFOs aren't physical, or at least some aren't physical? And David, you'll hold that answer, and we'll let you respond as soon as we do the station break. We have David Halperin. He has studied the UFO enigma for many, many years from various points of view. He's also the author of this new novel called Journal of a UFO Investigator about the teen UFO years. And we'll revisit that a little bit later in the show. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.